I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Kaurna people. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
This industry is as challenging as it ever has been. However, that also creates a great opportunity to continually reshape what it is you do and how you do it.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Gemtree Wines is a brand that wears its heart on its sleeve. The winery reflects the kind hearts of the people that make the wine, in balance with the nature on the earth that it is grown. Mike Brown is chief winemaker at Gemtree in McLaren Vale. Alongside his wonderful wife, Melissa, they are custodians of their land and farm biodynamically in harmony with nature. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, Shantae, thank you so much. It's an absolute honour to be here.
Oh, I always love being able to have a chat with you and hear about what you're doing in your very special place in McLaren Vale. Thank you for pausing in your work today. No doubt you're busy doing something or other in the vineyard or in the cellar. Where are you joining us from today?
I've actually jumped into a peaceful place called our home. I've been in the winery this morning, looking at some 2022 wines, which are very exciting. But I sometimes come back to the place that we call home for a bit of reflection. We've got a beautiful, we're very, very fortunate. We've got a beautiful view up into the foothills of Mount Lofty Ranges, which runs from Selex all the way through to the Clare Valley. I can see the transformation in what we're doing viticulturally, and I like this place because I can sit back and first of all think for myself. And although it's wonderful to be in touch with all of our staff members and all the people that we work with and around our business, this is, I suppose, this is my place of peace. And to think about the things that I'm doing well and the things, more importantly, probably the things I need to improve on. So this is my happy place.
Oh, that's so important to have that little bit of solace amongst the havoc of every day, and that's where all those light bulb moments happen. So I'm glad that you have a special place you go to. Mike, tell us a little bit about the background of how you came to be in McLaren and winemaker at Gemtree. I know that there's a little bit of a story about where you're originally from and where you are today. So fill us in a little bit about your background.
You sure you're ready for this?
I'm strapped in. I'm ready.
Well, I'll try to keep it as interesting as possible. So my parents are farmers. They essentially are they're the most beautiful and I think centered people that I know. I've just actually celebrated with them in person their 60th wedding anniversary. And they brought up, I've got two older sisters. They, from being from agriculture, they had a very strong connection into the place where they were farming, and that is no more complicated than understanding that every single season you are at, I think, you're not in control. And so from a young age, I understood, so farming had a deep passion and interest within the family. We travelled around to a few different states and trying not necessarily to find the Holy Grail, but Dad continued to, I think, chase that ultimate where is his place going to finish up. And I don't think that ever came to fruition for him, and that's not a bad thing, because that was a really interesting learning for the kids to sort of, we lived in New South Wales, we lived in South Australia, we lived in Victoria, and So we went to many different schools, and so we were forced in a way to communicate with people. And so whilst agriculture was our foundation, we had to learn to understand that, you know, perhaps be outside of your comfort zone in some way, shape or form. So I boarded in Sydney at a great school and was given an opportunity to get a great education, which was, I'm very fortunate to have had that, and I reflect on that often. Sydney was a great place. It was a fantastic, I think, surroundings to grow up in. I met some great people, but I don't ever think it was home. And so, weirdly, my first year out of school, 1987, I entered the stock exchange, and that was the worst year to ever enter the financial industry. So I was in the stock market. I was retrenched in October of that year. I had no idea what I was going to do. I walked into a bottle shop to a chain in Neutral Ray called Theo's and asked for a job. I was very fortunate to get one. It was a busy time of the year. It was November. And that started my, I suppose, digression into my interest in wine. And apart from mum and dad drinking wine and having it on the table quite regularly, and it wasn't necessarily a passion of theirs, but it was something that they certainly had a lot of friends who were involved in the industry. And so I felt that perhaps this was an opening for me, and not necessarily at that stage thinking back into agriculture, but that's ultimately where it's taken me. But at the time it was, I was surrounded by interesting people, very progressive, and I think this industry has taught me an enormous amount of things. But what I could see very quickly is that the industry was very passionate. And so I went and studied in wine, and that sort of took me to South Australia twice. And the first time was to do basically a degree in wine marketing, and then the second time was to come down and do a vintage in 1994 with a guy called Warren Randall, who has a great name for himself in the industry and certainly what I would call a leader and an icon. And that my first vintage in 1994 at Andrew Garrett's, where he was chief winemaker. I also met my now wife, Melissa, and she had just come off a sort of an international holiday, and her dad had forged a very strong footprint in grape growing. So I fell in love with Melissa, and I very quickly, and I also I think from the very naive business person that I was at that point, saw an opportunity essentially perhaps to be able to take maybe what her mum and dad had formed as a grape growing business into maybe being able to start my adventure in winemaking. So I worked for Warren for a couple of years, and then I went and probably did my real winemaking apprenticeship with Chester at Darrenburg. And that really taught me, I think, about the art. He's a very creative, individualistic individual that, you know, follows his belief and passion to the nth degree, and I have nothing but incredible respect for him as a person. And both of those two gentlemen, I think, now looking back in, really crafted, I suppose, a belief in two very different sides of maybe winemaking in the industry, but taught me some really interesting lessons about perhaps what it is you need to do and how you need to do it. And then through, I suppose, those learning and sitting down and thinking, what would the opportunity be if we were to perhaps start something as a wine brand, and discussions with Melissa and thinking, you know, is it possible and where do we want to go, and starting a young family in 2000 and you know, we had perhaps a calling to go into the hunter and work for a big business, and that would have taken us away, and especially her away from her family. And so we decided to, yeah, in a really long way of saying, I'm sorry this has taken too long, but, you know, we decided to stay in McLaren Vale and start making wine for the first time off the family estate and started a business called Gemtree Wines.
I mean, you talking about Randall and Chester, I mean, you not only great winemakers, but really business savvy people as well. So you really did learn from the best in terms of the big picture of the industry you were kind of getting yourself into, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's been really important, Chante, in my development as a person, because I was a marketer, and you know, my parents had an understanding of agriculture, but the industry was completely foreign. So I'd learnt perhaps from a school of education around how to market things and how to sell things, but ultimately, essentially, I think the teachings of what you've just said of those two people was, okay, define your craft, number one. What is your point of difference? And then commercially be able to communicate that, right, through to whatever it is, you know, your tribe, your people, and don't venture too far away from what it is you know that you're really good at. And I keep on coming back to this all the time that, you know, the industry is vast. We're here essentially as people for a period of time. What Melissa and I are very, very firm believers in the way that we do things. And absolutely at no point are we saying we're the best. We can sit back and relax. And I think that the industry and the business that we're involved in, there are so many checkpoints along the way to make it real. And there is not a day that I go through in the process of my role, my job, the people I work with, where I don't learn something. And, you know, it's not always great, Chante. And this is not sympathy. This is just the reality that this industry is as challenging as it ever has been. However, that also creates a great opportunity to continually reshape what it is you do and how you do it, and to build relationships with people who I think are like-minded. And as an industry and a person who works in this industry, you have to have a lot of patience, and you have to be thinking long term, because if you're not prepared, I think, to make adjustments to perhaps your vision or your strategy and continue to refine, you'll become bored very quickly, and therefore you would move out of this industry. So we find a lot of people who are involved in, I think, the wine industry, where they're what we call lifers. You know, we are constantly, I think, we're making sure that we're reshaping, we're strategically thinking about the processes, the business model, all the things that we do on a day-to-day basis to make sure that our business model is sound. And that's not saying we move away from the strategy. It's making sure that as business owners, proprietors, custodians, makers, growers, that we are endeavouring to, I think, continuously improve, right? And that's not saying when you have a model that's working, move away from it. And aspirationally, you need to be bigger or better or, you know, making wines in a different way. But the journey that Melissa and I have gone through with this vineyard and into wine brand in diversification has, it's given us an opportunity first of all, that I didn't ever think was possible, right, as an individual. And what I saw when we first started making wine off the vineyard back in 1998 to where we are today, I would never have actually thought that was possible.
I don't know if it's got something to do with maybe being people that listen to the ebbs and flows of vintage and vintage conditions that I think makes a lot of time winemakers are flexible in that they do need to change and adapt depending on what the weather and Mother Nature has given them year by year. But it's very true. In business, you need to do so as well. And that's been never more apparent than these last couple of years where everything's gone out the window. And like you said, you do have to restructure things and look at what you can do and maybe what you can't control. But whenever I think about your brand, I think that it was incredibly fortunate because for me, I see Melissa, your wife, being chief viticulturist and co-owner, but really such a compliment to what you offer as well. So tell me a little bit about meeting Melissa and also about what she does in terms of adding her incredible brain and talent to the other half of Gemtree.
Wow. Okay. Well, she's more than half, Shanto. That's the first thing.
Glad to hear you say it.
look, it's well, I'm the luckiest man alive. the passion and the vision and the foresight, the emotional attachment, the connection. You know, she has so many more skills, essentially, of understanding and being able to be the glue, not only in a business perspective, but our family, which is paramount. So, you know, Melissa's role in this business is, it's all encompassing. People gravitate to her because of her personality. She's kind. She's strategic. I think that without doubt, her passion essentially around sustainability has driven this business into a phase that it just wouldn't have been possible had other people been involved in direction, including me. So, and her connection back into family and land is the most important. Well, no, it's not the most important. It's a critical part, I think, in our business's ongoing development, because we never lose sight of the fact that we're so fortunate to be where we are. So I think Melissa's role, we talk about, you know, chief viticulturist and co-owner and whatever, but, you know, she's also managing the cellar door. She's the pillar of our tourism movement. You know, she's a great communicator, not only across her team, but also the whole business. And we all, I think, learn from a different approach from different people all the time. And so, you know, I'm very fortunate to be working with her. We're very different people, but I think that has its pros and cons. And I think maybe I'm a bit more, I'll say emotionally high-wired in terms of, you know, perhaps some of my decisions are a bit more reactive, which in some instances can be beneficial, but in other instances will be detrimental. So I think the balance of the yin and yang within the company is very good, and I couldn't think of a better person to be running the ship. And as we go further down this pathway, Shante, it's very, very clear that I am playing a supportive role, not only essentially with what we do in business, but actually also more so on the home front and the family front. And that's been a great maturing process for me to go through as an individual, because the stereotypical male, you know, what is that?
What is that? That's a great question.
So, you know, I'm learning every day on a business front, on a home front, on a, you know, and that encompasses our family, you know, as a family life. And it's a great opportunity, you know, when we go through life to keep on looking in and thinking, how do I grow? And I have, you know, we've got three beautiful kids. We've got one who's about to turn 21, one who's 19, and one who's 12, and two boys and a girl. And, you know, I'm certainly not in any way, shape or form living under any sort of what would we say there? Any my main role in this life is to be incredibly present with my kids, to assist them when they need me for information. And the business used to absolutely rule and determine who I was as a person. That is certainly not the case now. So, coming back into your question around Melissa, and, you know, I'm learning all the time about how to be a better person. I'm working as much on the business as I am on myself. And I think when we get an opportunity to work, we'll say, side by side with someone who you have an emotional attachment to, but also is your kindred spirit in business, now that's really unique. So we're in a really fortunate posse at the moment, and don't take advantage of any part of that, because it's uniquely special.
It certainly is. And I think that, you know, with my engagement that I've had so far with your wines and your story, is that it really comes across that I think that you know who you are as a business, but also who you are as people and as a family unit, and it all is expressed in everything that you do each day. So when, you know, someone walks away, whether it be from your cellar door or from a tasting with you, they get a real sense of what you guys are about. And I think that that is one of the most important stories that you can be telling. And I think the Gemtree Eco Trail is a big part of that. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the Eco Trail?
Sure. So the with the development of the grape growing business with Melissa's mum and dad, you know, Paul and Jill Buttery, that there was an opportunity to purchase a piece of land, neighbouring piece of land up in the foothills of McLaren Flat, where the rest of the viticulture was and is. And it was a degraded, essentially, dairy farm. And on part of that dairy farm was an old creek line, essentially, that had, we found out later, 60 tonnes of scrap metal basically dumped in there from all the years of people thinking this is a good opportunity to be able to dump something without cost. And we found out, we looked at essentially the rest of the land we had around us, and that was around 300 acres, and there wasn't any demand at that point too, and the land essentially that it was sitting on wasn't deemed usable for viticulture. So through Melissa's sustainable and ecological vision, she had a discussion with Greening Australia, and we formed a partnership with them, and that partnership was around being able to rejuvenate a piece of land to give something back to nature. Now, at that point, I don't think anyone really understood what that opportunity was or what it really meant, but it felt good because there were some beautiful over 200 plus year red gum trees in this site, and thank goodness nobody decided to, you know, to cut them down. The land wasn't deemed acceptable for planting. And so out of that 25-acre area, through the help of Greening Australia back in 1994, we decided to start a tree planting community exercise. So Arbor Day, essentially, which is a natural tree planting day, we would get the community involved and host a barbecue and obviously have some gem tree wine, which everyone thought, I'm going to plant a tree and get a free glass of wine. That's a great trade-off. So very quickly, all of a sudden, this little pocket within our vineyard started to take shape as something that we didn't think it was. And so then through discussions with like-minded people, it was like, okay, well, we are now going to, as a business, dedicate this to back to nature. So then out of that, what we wanted to be able to do was to perhaps showcase that in agriculture, it is possible to be able to coexist with nature. So to be able to farm and give back at the same time. So we had an understanding that we had this site and it wasn't about being able to get economic benefit from it, but it was about being able to give back to the site or to the land to open this up to the public to showcase how perhaps a business can coexist in nature and how it's not about commercial benefit, but how we then can contribute to making sure that the longevity of the land is actually really, truly sustainable. And that really happened around 2001 to 2002, where we decided to open up the Eco Trail as a 1 kilometre walking path for people, families, etc., to come in, have a walk around, have a picnic, and maybe to just enjoy, essentially, in the heart of, we'll say, the McLaren Vale region, right, what it is that you can coexist as a, we'll call it a grape-growing, viticultural, winemaking business, but also be very connected with nature and make sure you're contributing. The second part of that, which I think is really important, is that what it's done is it's created the biodiversity across the vineyard, which is absolutely crucial, that fits in with our philosophy. So part one was giving back into nature and saying, okay, we have an obligation to be able to. So we are farmers and we are taking fruit off the land every year, but we actually can make sure that our footprint is not degrading every year. That's the part one. And then part two is that, okay, we can open this up as an area, essentially, to be able to say to people, well, this is a little place where you can come to rest, right? And maybe, you know, reconnect with nature in some way, shape or form. And that was the start of the Gem Tree Eco Trail.
And it's going great guns today. I mean, you've also got emus on the property, and do you have koalas? You have koalas within the area too, is that right?
There's a koala rescue, so it's called a gunya, which is, so we're taking koalas that are being rehabilitated, essentially, so we have relationships essentially with local people that have koalas that need to be brought back into, you know, into nature. So we've got what's called a gunya there, where the koalas can sit very naturally, be rehabilitated. So during the fires that came through in 2019, the gunya was packed with koalas. But, you know, it's a nice sort of area that takes you away, let's say, from the commercialization, the reality of every single thing that we do every day. And it's actually a really lovely place for families to come. And I just think, just out of the heart of the region, enjoy a bit of nature.
I think it's so incredibly smart as well. I mean, I know that you offer You can do bike tours around the Eco Trail. You can stay in a cabin. And essentially, you're winning people over by showing them just how unique and beautiful your part of the world is without having really to do much except for to just give them the opportunity to experience that. And on top of that, you've got an amazing cellar door so that you can come and try the wines. But when I visit a region, the first thing I want to do is see the natural beauty of the area. That's my first go-to. And it would be in any place I go in the world is like, what is this place? And what's the story that I need to learn from it? So I think that that's been really smart, but also just the right way to go about things in terms of your philosophy as well.
Mm. Yeah, connection's an interesting thing, isn't it? I think that we're sort of back into nature, and I think we've learnt that the last 2 years, 2.5 years has been interesting for all of us on many fronts, and there's many takeaways, but one of them I think is place is important. Taking away perhaps some of the things that the pressures and the issues that have become part of our lives, and so we're more aware than we ever have been, I think, of the place of where we come from and how we can maybe contribute back into making the planet that we live on last a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And I think that reiteration of if we all make perhaps one change or can do one thing that will assist this process, then at least we're making a contribution. And I think that's really important, and that's become very heightened. It's always been there, but it's become a lot more prevalent in the last couple of years. And so, we don't pretend for a second that we're the best at what we do. What we feel very comfortable with is that we're making a contribution that can always be improved, and we're constantly working on that. But hand on heart, I think if we can give people a place where they have some sort of connection with, and it doesn't necessarily, again, have to have a monetary value, but then you're making a contribution to their welfare.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you love most when you think about, taking a particular hard year or a good year and bottling it and going through the process of every day waking up on your little patch of dirt? What are some of the most rewarding parts at the end of the day? What keeps you going back and getting up early in the morning every day in your life?
So finding a balance is important. I think that, to me, I suppose our business, that performs a function, but it doesn't define us. Understanding that and being comfortable with that is crucially important. And, I'm far from perfect at this. I had a moment this morning, essentially, where, Melissa and I had a very open and frank discussion about, this is as tough as it's ever been, and you question your belief and your pathway, and not who you are, but we're making headway here and whatever. So I think what keeps you going is that the people around you, number one. I think that the industry is full of resilient people. I was very fortunate just to be invited to another person where you could call it competition within the region to their venue because they wanted to involve me, not because I'm important, but because it wasn't about that particular brand or that particular person, they wanted to make it more about some people within the region who have a point of difference or maybe a point of interest. I think that collaborative approach of it's not about, you know, just one particular thing that in life that is going to make the difference between whatever you want to define as success. That I think every day, you know, as an individual, I have an opportunity. I'm constantly learning. I'm 53. I'm very, very fortunate to be living where I am. We have a great opportunity, yet it absolutely is challenging and challenging me sometimes to the point of not breaking down and bursting into tears. Not that I have a problem with that, but that's not where all my emotions are at the moment. It's giving me, it driving me to continually look at how we improve as a business, and that's not in isolation. I'm not alone. So I think, you know, the journey and the opportunity of what we have in front of us drives me every day to, I think, look for continuous improvement, and that could be related to myself or it could be related to components in the business.
Yeah, I think there is a natural part of our makeup is to grow and learn and develop, isn't there? And so something that feeds that is exchange, but it also gives you something different to look forward to each day, you know, knowing that it's not going to be exactly the same as the day before it. And like you said, it comes with challenging moments, and sometimes you think, God, what's it all for? But nice to know that you know, that's a part of your philosophy, is to keep striving and keep learning, essentially. I think it's just that's a wonderful gift to be given, is to the opportunity to learn. So your portfolio, I mean, I won't dip into it too far, but because I love it. I absolutely love your portfolio. I think it really covers the bases of some beautiful traditional wines and also really exciting experimental, lots of fun wines, lots of delicious, juicy numbers in there. There's a little bit of something for everyone, I find, in the GemTree portfolio. How do you find a balance between essentially the two, you know, making wines that you have been making for some time and also finding that balance in looking to maybe new methods of aging, or whether it be your wine that you bury underneath back into the ground? Where do you add a wine into your portfolio and think, okay, this is going to have a place here?
Wow. So the business at the moment, I think, captures the elements of tradition, but also completely understanding the opportunity of working with the styles of that are more relevant to region than the styles of the past. So we have set ourselves a mission in not chasing a particular style, but making sure that the varietal composition of the brand is relevant, and therefore it's constant change. So we, you know, if we look at when Melissa started working in her father's business, a viticultural company, that the vineyard was set up in a very different way to what it is, you know, today. So it was set up as a workhorse, essentially, of supply, and now it is the master of quality. And with that, there's been the change in the way that we grow the grapes. That's not even the methodology that we use in terms of biodynamic or organic, but that was in terms of the viticultural structure, and with that also then the varieties that we grow. So our palates are changing constantly. You know, as a business, that we are certainly not set in stone. Yes, we're agriculture. Yes, we need to be relevant. But one of the things that we have always been very focused on is making sure that the varieties we grow here are relevant to region. So the birth, and we are not pioneers here, so please don't take this as for a second as that I am suggesting for a second that Gemtree has pioneered this pathway. We followed. So Fiano and Grenache and, so those two varieties in particular, Fiano we've come to out of Chardonnay because Chardonnay is not relevant for McLaren Vale but incredibly relevant to Australia and globally as a variety. Grenache, so why Fiano? Because it's a textural aromatic white that is easy to understand, people can pronounce it, and delicious to drink. Grenache is a variety that has been synonymous with McLaren Vale for as long as Shiraz, if not longer. So, sort of mid-1800s. We don't have the oldest finds, but we have some great viticultural heritage and making, I think, styles of Grenache that are really relevant to today's, we'll say, palate, right? And that's critical. I'm very conscious of where my palate has developed over time, and I'm a tiny little section, but, we're constantly benchmarking varietal composition, style, what's relevant to region. Not we're going to pull out every Shiraz vine that we have because I love Shiraz in this region, but it's becoming a smaller section of what people are interested in. Yes, it's important to have in your portfolio. So coming back to your question, I think that the composition of the portfolio at the moment represents perhaps the change of where Gemtree has been and where it's going to, fully understanding that it's constantly, we'll say, in transition. And that means that, you think of the great houses essentially of the world that does a piece of viticultural land just sit there essentially for 150 years without change? Of course it doesn't. So, we're dealing with climatic conditions, changing climatic conditions. We're dealing with changing consumer trends. And it's not about throwing the baby out of the bathwater. My mother says something very simple about sticking to your knitting. Yes, you do that. But, you're also very, very conscious of where we see flavours and palate trends changing and being relevant to be able to have an offering across a global market, which is very, very different, to be able to say, yes, we can do this. And it's not that our brand does everything for everyone, but I think that we have something that will appeal to someone somewhere.
Oh, well, you can be certainly sure of that. I can definitely attest to that. It's so nice to revisit revisit you guys, and I've always enjoyed your wines. I've enjoyed seeing them change and adapt over the years. That even comes down to the remarketing and your labels. It's always just been a pleasure to watch and experience. Mike, I would like to know, if you could only drink three alcoholic beverages for the rest of your life, what would they be and why?
Ooh, wow. Chantilly. There's a lack of preparation.
Look, it's hypothetical.
Yeah. Lack of preparation from my perspective. Okay. So I do have a love for champagne.
Good. Excellent.
So I'm ticking that box. I'm saying Riesling, because I do love what Riesling has to offer globally in terms of Riesling just, oh, my goodness me, it's just got so many parallels that becomes attractive.
Yeah.
And I'm going to finish with a medium-bodied red wine style that I think that the French and Italians and Spanish have been doing well for hundreds of years. and something that, you know, we're just starting to understand, I think, in this country a little bit more. So, you know, it could be Chianti. So, you know, the depth and stylistic and rustic expression of tannin maturity and we'll call it, you know, oxidative characters or, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely looking at the third option of being able to perhaps choose stylistically in that medium body section of red wine styles, which there's a plethora of at the moment, and it's not just about light bodied and juicy and fruit friendly. It's about depth and complexity without alcohol.
Yes, definitely a genre for the future Australian drinkers, I think. And like you said, there is some incredible Sangiovese that just ticks all the boxes of all the nuances of so many different facets in excellent red wine, doesn't it? So I can completely see why you've chosen that. And it's a very smart move, I have to say. Mike, it's been such a pleasure having you on. I love what you and Mel do down there. Love your wines, but also love the philosophy and your exposure, the way that you let people into your hearts, but also into your little place. And I think it's a really special little spot you've got down there, and Gemtree truly is a fantastic brand. So congratulations, and thank you for spending some of your day with me.
Oh, it's been like, yeah, I'm so flattered. Dude. I nearly fell off my perch when someone suggested that you might be interested in talking to me. So thank you for the opportunity, and it's an absolute, it's wonderful to have a conversation with you over the phone. And, yeah, you keep up your good work, and I look forward to the next opportunity when we have to cross paths.
Definitely will. And, look, I meant to say earlier, during the second lockdown that we had, you were kind enough to send a bottle of wine out to every single person on my wine team, and we got together and had a glass, and it was the time to bring everyone together and have a chat. And then we popped your egg Grenache on the list when we got back, and it went absolutely gangbusters because everyone was so affected by that experience and by meeting the two of you over Zoom that we couldn't keep the wine, you know, it was coming in and out the door every day. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Shantae. Yeah, awesome. Lovely talking to you. You take care.
You too. Chat soon. Bye.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at Over a Glass Pod. And contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.